Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to Kudzu Vine for January 29th, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, welcome from Atlanta.
And greetings, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, big show this evening. Here in just a moment, David McAvoy of the Blue Arkansas blog will be calling us to discuss all of the Arkansas political happenings, including the one that made national news and a lot of outrage. And we're going to have some outrage on that in just a second. We're also going to cover a whole host of other topics, including the audio of the president's first ad. We're going to review it. And then there's just all kinds of things around the South. The state of North Carolina will definitely be getting a new governor and many other things. But before waiting longer, Tim, this thing that happened in Arkansas outraged you so much. You're doing the outrage of the week on it, and we're going to lead off the show, which may be a first. Is that correct, Tim?
That's the first time I believe we've ever done the outrage to start with, David.
So, well, the floor is yours.
So here we go. Polk County, Arkansas, is not exactly a prime political battleground type of area. Oh, the two parties are represented there, okay, but it is a very conservative area of the very conservative 3rd Congressional District in Arkansas. You'd have to score it, I suppose, as a safe Republican seat. There's a guy by the name of Ken Aiden, though, who is running this year as a Democrat to take on Representative Steve Womack. He is given little chance of winning, or for that matter, probably even making this race very close. His campaign manager for this monumental task is a fellow by the name of Jake Burris. He's a regular sort of guy, a family man with 4 kids and a pet cat in a town called Russellville. Well, at least he did have a pet cat. Let me get to that now. Last Sunday night, at just about the time we were doing this very show, maybe a little later, Burris and his family returned home from a family trip. And one of his children discovered the family pet cat dead on the doorstep. Its head had been violently bashed in, and the word liberal had been written in magic marker on its side. Now, I don't need to repeat the obvious that there are definitely some sick, twisted people out there. But this incident just seems to go beyond that. This was an act of extreme intimidation designed to terrorize this family. It must be very disconcerting to Mr. Burris to know that there are twisted individuals who know where he lives. Not only that, but apparently, since this was done while the family was out, then they must also know his comings and goings as well. And if such a heinous act could be committed by this person or persons against an innocent child's pet, then who is to say that these nuts wouldn't harm a person as well? It was reported in Arkansas that there's a radio station out there owned by Representative Womack's father that has actually published the names and other personal contact info of Ken Aiden's campaign staff. One of those staff members received a death threat in the mail. I hope that is rumor and not true, but if it is true, that station needs to stop that nonsense right now. They are putting the safety of these people at risk for political reasons. That is not acceptable. Again, I hope it's not true, but from the checking I have been able to do, it apparently is. Because one of the persons involved has filed a complaint against this radio station with the Federal Communications Commission. And killing a kid's pet to make a political statement defies description. This cat had no political beliefs. I never met a family pet who did. I know from personal experience that my own dog has never questioned the politics of anyone who has either fed her or shown her some affection. And the child who discovered the cat was not even old enough to be able to read the word liberal. Why did this small child have to endure this sight? What purpose, other than to render outright terrorism against the family, was accomplished? Well, if the purpose was to scare either Jake Burris or Ken Aiden away, then the crazy individual or persons who perpetrated this murder did not succeed. And if the purpose was to drive a political party out of the area, then they lost out there as well. Now, to those who did this, I hope you thought it was worth it, because not only is the Russellville Police Department looking for you, but the FBI probably soon will be as well. And you have been rightly condemned by all political people in both parties and by the local civic leaders there in Russellville and by people everywhere who have read about this outrage. Now, there are also people, believe it or not, who have suggested that just perhaps this is all a hoax designed to help the Aiden campaign. Well, let me assure these people that unless this picture that I saw is well doctored, it is a rather graphic picture of this poor dead animal. It is no hoax. It is all too real. It is as real as it gets. In this story, we have seen the evil that men do. In this cowardly act, we have witnessed what occurs when mentally unstable individuals, enraged that someone would present ideas in conflict with their own, decide to express that enragement in violence. How can this happen? This is America. We're better than this. I have to believe that. I cannot believe anything else. Let us all pause and think about this. And let us wish Godspeed to the authorities who hunt down these terrorists, and that's what they are. Let us hope they avenge this outrage, David.
Yes, and you were right to be outraged. I think anybody that heard about it was. Even all the Republicans are definitely outraged about this one. And yeah. I knew that when this topic came up, it was a perfect time to get back with our old friend from Blue Arkansas blog, David McAvoy. So he agreed to be on the show this Sunday, and we now welcome David to the show. Welcome back to the Kudzu Vine.
Thanks for having me back. It's been a long time.
Yes. Well, Arkansas politics keeps moving forward, and we hadn't checked in certainly since redistricting, but this story is horrific as it is. There is something that I think people want to know more. Hopefully, if we know more, we'll see less of this kind of thing, because obviously it doesn't advance our democracy in any way. David, can you give us a lot of facts? What is the latest updates or things that we might not know outside of Arkansas?
Well, for starters, you mentioned Womack's father's radio program. It has now come out that he has been actively engaging in suggesting that this was deliberately done to help the Aiden campaign out. He went so far as to say the Aiden campaign, you know, they don't have any money. So, you know, they're desperate. So you can be sure they're going to engage in some trickery. Well, yeah. Well, you know, mercifully, he has a very small following on his radio program. And if, you know, you look at the statistics you can gather, it's about maybe about a listenership of about 400 people in that area. So, but still and yet, you know, if it's just one of those people listening into this this vile stuff coming out of his radio program, then, you know, it's, with it being as heated and with people's tensions being as high as they are over this, there's no telling what he could inspire some nut to do. But beyond that, Jake has told me that the police have been very helpful. They're patrolling his neighborhood. The school has been very helpful in trying to keep the kids sheltered from all this, which was really Jake's main concerns. There's been an outpouring of support for the Aiden campaign and for Jake Burris in particular since this began. It's really great to see that at least this does bring out the best in humanity as well as the worst in a few individuals, I'm sad to say. But beyond that, things are just moving as they can, and we now have a contested race in the 3rd District, which is something that's very rare. This is a very Republican district, and it's really caught a lot of people by surprise.
Well, I mean, is it just the cat story or the cat incident, or are there other things that have moved the race?
This race was heating up before the cat story, and I think that's why this happened. Womack has made a few gaffes since he's been in office and alienated some people in a big way. It started with stuff like he came back and, you know, when all the budget deficit talks were going on and, you know, talk was of shutting down the government, defaulting on the debt, and said he couldn't afford to take a pay cut. Then, you know, these people from, I think it was the Carroll County a food shelter, or basically a group designed to get canned goods to people in poverty, went to him and were trying to talk about their needs. And he ended up on the record saying that, you know, they should learn how to do without. So, and that was just the small stuff. Eventually he came back. He did a town hall meeting there in Fayetteville, where a young woman named Kelly Eubanks got up and, you know, asked him why he would cut Pell Grants but not oil subsidies. Now, Kelly is a mom who's working two jobs to support two kids in addition to her husband's job. She's trying to go to college, finish up, and get her education. She's one semester away, and because she was dependent on the Pell Grants that they cut, she wasn't able to finish this past semester. So she was a little irate about that and wanted to take that up with Womack. And Womack essentially told her that the federal government has no business funding your education. If you want your education, maybe you ought to do like I did and join the Army. Well, she took a little umbrage, I guess is the word, at that, and tried to get him to talk about the oil subsidies and explain the hypocrisy there. And he told her to shut up and listen, ended up on camera yelling at people at this town hall. And, you know, it's just been one event for him like that after the other. And with Ken being a rather solid candidate, surprisingly, the tensions in this race have started to get a little high. And then this happens. And, you know, now it's everyone's eyes are on this race in this state. It's a very unusual thing to have happening here.
Yes, well, we know that that's just one of the districts. I don't want to steal all the questions from Tim and Catherine, but I know we want to cover just the new map in general and all the different districts. Tim, what are the questions congressionally that you have for David?
Well, the first thing I'd like to ask is about this very race. Is it true, as I reported in my outrage, that the Elder Womack's radio station had indeed published the names, addresses, personal contact info of members of Aiden's campaign staff on the air?
That and a few other despicable things. The lady that got the death threat was Aiden's press secretary, and that happened after he named her on the air, called her an idiot, and then said she lives in Eureka Springs. So that's one incident. Then there was this man who's not even connected with the campaign, George Lynn, who's just a supporter. He gave some money to Ken, and he called into the radio program, won a contest where he had to name some state park or something or other. And the prize for this was like a $7.60 check, roughly, I think. And when they asked him who to make the check out for, he said he wanted it made out to the Aiden campaign. Well, that went over like the proverbial lead brick, and he had to actually go down there to get the check. And then the next day, he had people, friends of his, who listened into the program, call him up and say, you know, your name was mentioned on the air, your last name was spelled out, and your phone number was given. And he said after that, that Womack's father had said, watch your back. And then he started getting these phone calls. I think the Washington Post is going to do an article up on this pretty soon. So it's rather disturbing the degree this vileness has really kicked up in the last few weeks. It's become very unsettling to see this happening. You know, I've always made the joke, you know, we Arkansans are too lazy to do anything like this, but apparently there are a few of us that are willing to get out of the recliners.
And the other question I wanted to ask was, since he's a freshman, was about the status of Rick Crawford up in the first district. How is that going to go this year?
Well, Rick Crawford probably hates me more than any other man in Arkansas. I filmed him at a town hall event where he basically imploded, and he ended up storming out of that event. And now whenever he sees me, or especially if he sees me with a camera, I'll be standing there and he'll just be glaring at me. Crawford has not done a very good job of reaching out to his constituents. I honestly, in my opinion, I don't think he's the brightest bulb in the box. I guess to his credit, you could say he's backed off some of the more extreme stuff. I mean, he's backed off of repealing the Affordable Care Act, said, well, maybe we should leave some of it in place. And that kind of upset some of his own supporters. But right now, there are two Democrats running in that race against him, and one is State Representative Clark Hall, and the other is the Arkansas State University economics professor, Dr. Gary Latanich. So depending on which one of those two makes it out of the primary, we could have we could probably see Representative Crawford replaced in November. So,
Well, let's hope that's true. And
yeah,
with that, I'm
that's good news.
Turn it over to Catherine.
Well, thanks a lot for being on with us tonight, David. I appreciate it. And I'm very, very sorry. As a cat owner and lover, I'm very sad to hear about this. And do not understand what would prompt someone to do such a horrific thing, but there's a lot of anger out there, I suppose. I wanted to ask you about the Democratic Party of Arkansas and how it's going, what its strengths and, you know, how things are going with the party. Are they organized? Are they working the ground? You know, those kind of things.
Six of one, half dozen of another. I'll say this. We've seen some improvements in the Democratic Party since the huge loss we had in 2010. I mean, we've replaced the party chairman, a lot of the people in the Democratic Party of Arkansas, as far as the executive officers. There's an effort now to revive the party at the county level and clean up our county party committees. I think there was a study done a while back where they found that with a 2% increase in Democratic turnout in 16 counties across the state, just 2%, mind you, we would have seen three Democratic candidates for state office, the lieutenant governorship, secretary of state, and land commissioner, win. Whereas last year, without that 2% increase, the Republicans were able to sweep those three offices. So reviving the county committees and is going to be essential to the future here. You know, the party, though, still has a lot of work to do. There were a lot of people who have not been willing to step up to the plate And, you know, they're looking at 2012. They're seeing Obama on the ticket. They're seeing what happened to Blanche Lincoln and to other candidates. And we've had a hard time finding candidates for Congress. There is still not an opponent for Tim Griffin in the 2nd District. In the 4th and in the 1st District, we had to hunt for a long time, and we still didn't get any of the top-tier recruits for those races. So still a lot of work to be done. There's some reason for optimism, though. We're looking very good in terms of money. The Democratic Party – oh, go ahead.
Well, that's an unexpected surprise, huh?
Oh, very much so. The Republican Party of Arkansas is just about bankrupt, and their Republican Party chairman, Mr. Doyle Webb, actually ended up taking a job as a city attorney in the town of Benton, and there's now this big scandal in Benton over that, over how he got the job and through the mayor who's corrupt and all this sort of thing. And so now there's an effort in Benton to recall the mayor following that. But the Democratic Party has been great at recruiting candidates for the state Senate and state House races. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. But it's an old thing, two steps forward, one step back.
Sometimes it works to just sit back and let the Republicans, you know, do their own dirty work and, you know, kill themselves, you know. We're seeing that nationally, you know. It's almost like President Obama doesn't really have to do anything for a while because the candidates for the nomination for the Republican Party seem to be destroying each other.
Exactly.
Sometimes that happens on a local level, too. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to turn this back to David.
No, not a problem.
Yeah. Well, David, I guess we kind of need to reset the congressional talk. Because we, of course, had to go into that race that made the news. But let's look at the districts overall. You went through redistricting. What changed?
Well, the first district became slightly more Democratic, absorbed some of the southern counties from in the Delta down from the 4th district. The 4th district, meanwhile, kind of snaked up and absorbed some of the mountain areas from the 3rd district. The second and third districts were the ones that were growing, and so they had to lose a lot of population. Initially, there was an idea to move Fayetteville, which is is a center of population growth in the third, and a huge Democratic bastion, down into the 4th district. Well, somehow or another, despite controlling majorities in the House and State House and State Senate, Democrats still couldn't get this passed. Don't ask me how. But anyway, now we have this. The fourth has now got this kind of triangle-shaped thing going up. The third has become kind of horseshoe-shaped. And the second just lost one of its counties into the fourth. The third, though, they went and divided this district. There's one town, I forget its name, where the district literally divides it in half, like down the street in the middle of town. So it was a mess, to say the least. But the first has become slightly more Democratic, as I said. The fourth is theoretically still Democratic based on the numbers. Second is about where it was. And the third is only slightly less Republican than before.
Yes. Well, I mean, we know sometimes when states don't gain or lose a seat, there's still changes that happen within that are very important. You kind of filled us in on that. And talk about splitting districts. Of course, there may be more than these, but I know there's a town in Georgia and Tennessee that has two different names, and it's all the same city, McCaseville, Georgia, and Copper Hill, Tennessee. So sometimes district lines don't make a lot of sense on a lot of levels.
Right.
Well, let's continue to kind of move through. So you mentioned the presidential race. We know that Arkansas, unfortunately, was one of the few states that actually went backwards from 2004 to 2008. David, do you think it's going to go back forwards and President Obama is going to do better in 2012 than he did in 2008? And can he even exceed what John Kerry did in 2004. Where is it going to be?
Well, I somehow doubt that Obama is going to improve drastically in Arkansas. And, of course, there are reasons for this. Race, of course, is part of it. The other part is the Obama campaign has never invested anything in Arkansas. Obama has never really come here. I don't remember him being here once in his last presidential campaign or once since he's been president. So that kind of makes it hard to fight back against some of the stuff that gets said about him when he's not investing in fighting back. But, you know, it's his race, it's his priority, I'm sure. But at the same time, if Mitt Romney is the nominee, I can see a lot of evangelical voters sitting on their hands and staying home during this election. With Newt Gingrich, I can't see a huge number of people being inspired to come out of the woodworks for him. So there may be some improvement, but I don't think it's going to be anything based on Obama's improvement in popularity so much as just having a nominee that's toxic to a segment of the base.
Yes, it's kind of interesting. The polls right now are showing that Romney does better than Gingrich nationwide, but you're saying that in Arkansas, Gingrich would be a better nominee for Republicans, although I'm sure neither side is planning their maps around Arkansas this time.
Right. Well, that's my gut feeling. I have no evidence to back any of that up. So.
Well, hey, you're the expert, so you live in the state. We're letting you speculate and taking your word as gospel. So,
well,
you know,
I might stop short of that, but I think it's just the same.
Well, looking, we talked about all that. Now, you mentioned about state Senate and state House candidates. What recruitment's going on there that would be interesting? I mean, is there a chance that big seats will change? Because you said that Arkansas is still controlled by Democrats in the House and the Senate, which makes it a rarity now in the South. Because a lot of states pass time flip, like North Carolina, Alabama, and Mississippi.
Right. Well, there are. First, let me start off this way. With redistricting and the population shift, the traditionally Democratic areas in the Delta have seen a lot of districts being taken away and more districts being created in the northwestern part of the state. There has been an effort by the Democrats to include the growing Latino population in the state. It's the fastest growing minority group in Arkansas, as it is pretty much everywhere in the country. At one point, I'm not sure if this is still true, but at one point, Arkansas had the fastest growing Latino population in the nation. So there's been an effort to include that in redistricting and to reach out to Latino candidates. We have a woman running who, if elected, she would be the first Latina to serve in the state legislature. We have several state representatives in the Republican Party who have just embarrassed themselves in so many different ways that their races are looking competitive. So that could be where the action is in this state this time around.
Yes. Now, while I got you on the line, we know that you have congressional races, state House and state Senate. There's no other statewide races that we could see on research tools like Politics One. Are there some other statewide races that we wouldn't know about?
No. It's all the state legislative races this year, and it's the congressional races. Nothing else is up.
Okay. Any other things that we need to know about as far as Arkansas politics in the next few months?
Well, I would keep an eye on the 2nd District to see if there's a candidate that's going to merge against Tim Griffin. I'd keep an eye on the 4th because the Democratic primary down there is not settled as of yet. And I would watch the 1st District very closely in the primary because that's definitely a race that falls along ideological lines. It's a blue dog state representative, Clark Hall, against a more progressive candidate in the form of Dr. Gary Latinich. So that one could be interesting.
Yes, you had alluded to, you thought if one candidate won, that race would go Democratic or have a much better chance the other way it wouldn't. Which candidate do you feel, if you feel comfortable telling us, is more likely to make that race Democratic?
Well, you know, I have... I probably should not go too far into that because I'm going to make someone mad at me in this state no matter what I say. But I'll put it this way. I've made it clear that I'm not entirely happy with the direction that the Clark Hall campaign has taken. That's not to say that, you know, they would be totally unwinnable, but I do have some doubts in the approach of, you know, attacking Democrats at the federal level and running away from the party label and so on. Dr. Latanich has to prove himself on the campaign, but I think he is going to surprise people. He has a lot of strengths, his veteran status, his ability to connect with people, and just his message, the message will at least resonate in a Democratic primary. But I would keep an eye on this race and just see how this shakes out in the next few months.
Yes. Well, David, we appreciate you joining the Kudzu Vine. I'm sure as these races progress, we're going to call on you again. And if people want to read more about what you have to say each and every day, tell them the address for the Blue Arkansas blog.
Thank you. Thank you. We're getting a new look here this week, so, you know, people need to come by and check that out.
Okay, so it's BlueArkansasBlog.com?
Yep.
Okay, well, we hope people join and read. And thanks again, David.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, that was David was quite informative. We're about the halfway point of the show, which is perfect segue to get into our other topics. So the first one I wanted to get in is the fact that the president released his first ad of 2012. And I'm going to play that ad, and then we're going to discuss it.
Secretive oil billionaires attacking President Obama with ads fact-checkers say are not tethered to the facts. While independent watchdogs call this president's record on ethics unprecedented. And America's clean energy industry, 2.7 million jobs and expanding rapidly. For the first time in 13 years, our dependence on foreign oil is below 50%. President Obama kept his promise to toughen ethics rules and strengthen America's energy economy.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Okay, that is the first 30-second ad. It's running in a lot of battleground states, not nationwide. Catherine, what are your thoughts on that ad?
This is the first time I've heard it, but I think that it sounds a little dark and gloomy, and I'm not sure that's such a good sort of tone to set for this election. I think there's going to be a lot of that gloom and doom on the other side. I'd rather see a more bright, I'm not saying it should be all happy, but I think it should be a little brighter. I think the two issues are, it's an interesting choice for him to make to talk about ethics and energy, considering that everyone knows that there's so many concerns about the economy. Of course, the economy does, the energy segment does certainly have an impact on jobs, and so that the fact that there's all these new jobs in energy is good. I mean, I think that's it's kind of an interesting choice of topics from my perspective. But, you know, I have a lot of admiration for President Obama and the people around him, so I'm sure this is part of a larger theme or message and campaign, so it'll be interesting to hear how this fits in with the larger strategy.
Okay. Well, Catherine was first in the focus group. Tim, go ahead. What do you think?
Well, I saw the ad online, and I think it was done with the thought of Mitt Romney being the opponent in mind, first of all. It aired Thursday in Iowa, Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, Virginia, and Wisconsin. All six of those are swing states this year by, you know, any definition. It's unusual to do, you know, an ad like this early. I think they probably were able to do that because they just frankly have a whole lot of money, so why not get started?
I didn't really, though, think the ad was anything special, even though they tried to address in an offhanded way with energy the issue of the Keystone Pipeline, the Canadian oil thing. But I'm with Catherine on one thing. I didn't think this ad was anything special, nothing to write home about, nothing memorable about it that people will be talking about.
Yes, and I'm going to ask y'all each a follow-up question. You can just give me a yes or no. Would it be more effective to have two 15-second ads, one on energy, one on ethics? Catherine, what do you think?
Probably. I would say yes.
Tim?
No, I'm going to say no because it would have been more effective to have the first ad about totally something else.
Okay. Well, we got opinions. That's good. Well, let's stay with President Obama. We're going to bring it back to Georgia, unfortunately, on this one. You know that Georgia's been talked about as a fringe swing state. My thought is if Georgia's in play, the Republicans are lost anyway. But I'm sure they would like to not even have to worry about Georgia. And probably the quickest way to do that is not have the sitting president actually be on the ballot. Now, probably 90-95% of Americans out there would not really question the legitimacy of the president being able to run for re-election. But unfortunately, some of that 5% lives in Georgia, and they've brought a case that actually had to go to some version of court this past week. Catherine, tell us what you know since it was Atlanta and Mike Jablonski defended the president, at least through press releases. What's going on?
Well, they're challenging his, natural-born citizen whether or not he's a natural-born citizen, President Obama. And surprisingly, it was pushed through into an administrative law judge, and it's very odd that it even got this far. I think everyone is surprised by it. One of the attorneys on the plaintiff's side is Orly Tate, who's this kind of wacky attorney/dentist from California who has made some hay in Georgia before when she defended a couple of military people who claimed they didn't have to serve because President Obama was not a legitimate president, so they didn't have to serve under him. That was a couple of years ago. I was frankly quite surprised that this got very far, and Jablonski is defending the president, and he is the attorney of record in Georgia for President Obama. And he wrote a rather scathing letter to Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, requesting that this whole thing be withdrawn, and that was denied. And so they went to court on Thursday. The president and his team chose not to acknowledge this or show up in court at all because they think it's ridiculous. And so that got a lot of attention, as some of you might have seen. The chair of the party was on the Rachel Maddow show on Thursday talking about it. Or it was either Wednesday. I think it was Thursday night. It just is further, embarrassment for Georgia. We would just look like so ridiculous when this happens. But I can't remember what the actual status of it. I think they continued the case, and they'll, make some decision at some future date, I guess.
I think the main thing is still making headlines. Tim, I don't know about you, but if Mike Jablonski wants to go down there and reenact the scene from Animal House when they get put on double secret probation and then march out of the court, I'll volunteer. How about you?
Yeah, I would rather see him reenact the food fight scene there, David. That would be better. Look, the president was subpoenaed by this court. Well, I hate to break this to him, but if I'm right, I don't believe administrative law courts can subpoena federal officials. So they just said they would not participate in the proceedings. And if I'm also not mistaken, Brian Kemp has no authority to remove the president from the ballot. If I'm not mistaken, so I don't even know why they're going through with this. It's crazy.
What I don't quite understand, and I should have, I meant to look into this more carefully this week. I don't know if this case is just about the presidential preference primary or if it's about the general election as well. If it's only about the presidential preference ballot, then no one has any authority to make any decisions about that because that is a decision that's made by the Democratic Party of Georgia. They could put Mickey Mouse on the ballot if they want to. Well, maybe not Mickey Mouse. But they could put me on the ballot. They could any human being. Mickey Mouse, is not really a human being. I don't know if that would work. But
Catherine, you were born in Michigan. That's near the Canadian border. So I'm sure there's somebody out there that wants to see your birth certificate. And it better not say certificate of live birth. That's kind of questionable.
I know. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. And I admire the president and his team for not acknowledging it because, really we expect the president in the midst of everything that's going on in this country with the economy and with, withdrawing the troops from various places and all the things that are going on, really we expect him to show up at some court in Georgia to defend the fact that he's really a natural-born citizen and he's the elected president? I mean, it's preposterous when you review what we're talking about here. I mean, it's just preposterous.
What's even more important is it makes us look in the eyes of the rest of the country like a bunch of rubes or something down here. It's downright embarrassing for something like that to be going on in the Empire State of the South. And they ought to just, these birthers, I don't know.
The Koch brothers, and funding all this stuff. Well, and, this comes on the heel, of course, the guys in the legislature trying to repeal the 17th Amendment. And, it's funny, just a few weeks ago, we actually said the Republicans weren't doing a lot of this, and now they've started, and Brian Kemp is now he's an elected official, so they're culpable. Because I will say this, on Peach Pundit, they kind of poo-pooed this move. They don't see this as real productive. And they, tried to shut this down. I'll say this, the Republican Party machine in Georgia has not really said anything about it. They've tried to play quiet. But now Kemp, with what he does, basically the entire Republican machinery is now responsible because he spoke up in this way. I'm sure a lot of that was about Brian Kemp because now if he runs for some office down the road, he can talk about how he stood and did this to a bunch of Tea Partiers at some Republican gathering. And so I don't think he had the interest of his whole party as a whole even in this. I think this is all about him in a primary race down the road. And I think the general election of voters in Georgia should remember this thing.
Yeah.
Well, and it's important to remember that while he is an elected official in the Republican, he's an elected Republican, he serves all of Georgia. That's something that we seem to forget that his, once he's elected, he works for all of us. And this is really not the best use of his time as our Secretary of State. There's plenty of other things that he could be focusing on.
Yeah, but as long as they feel that the Georgia Democrats are about 40% of the electorate and that winning the Republican nomination is tantamount to winning the office, they're never going to care. And so eventually we're going to have to win a race, hopefully in a cycle or two statewide, so they'll have to care, and then we can stop some of this nonsense. Well, let's stay in Georgia. And one point of pride for the past nearly decade and a half has been the Hope Scholarship, and last year we discussed at length changes to the Hope Scholarship. They've been brought up again because obviously the money is just running short, and we know something's going to have to be done, and both sides have proposed things. Catherine,
Jason Carter's been kind of on the forefront of this. What are some things going on with the Hope Scholarship?
Well, if any of you missed Jason, Senator Carter's speech from the well the other day about the Hope Scholarship, it's really worth the listen. It's only a few minutes, and it's very compelling argument for changing the putting an income cap on Hope Scholarship family income. This year it would be, if they could cap it at $140,000 a year, 94% of the, you know, outstanding achieving students would be able to receive Hope Scholarships, and the funds would not be dwindled as they have been for the past year because of the change that they made last year. I think that he makes a very good argument for everyone, not just Democrats, but for everyone to take a second look at these changes that were made last year and fix them. He had all the statistics, the number of students who are not able to get Hope Scholarships this year, and especially in technical colleges across the state, and particularly in the more rural areas of the state where those technical colleges really can make a big difference in those students' lives. So I think that, as always, Senator Carter is a very staunch supporter and obviously has made a lot of efforts to examine the statistics and the finances of the Hope Scholarship. And I commend him for his, you know, stalwart work on this, and hope that both the Republicans and Democrats can come together and try to look at this again and make the changes that are necessary so that this can continue, you know, for years to come, instead of ultimately, it looks like if they continue on this path, we would probably run out of money for the Hope Scholarship in somewhere around 2016.
Yeah, so, and I think my son graduates later in the decade than that, and my daughter after that. So I have a vested interest in that, because right now their report cards would have them on track for getting Hope Scholarship. Obviously, elementary, middle school grades aren't high school grades, so I have a definite vested interest in it. One thing I would like to get either Senator Carter or somebody else on the show that's an expert so we can really go this in detail, but one thing I've always thought would be a good idea, since the program's run out of money, even if they have an income cap or not, I'd like to see a thing where somehow if you saved lottery tickets, like if you purchased lottery tickets or even there's some kind of card, you could save the lottery ticket and show that you were, you know, using, you were paying into the program, if you will, and then even people that maybe millionaires, if they had been buying lottery tickets, somehow they could get their money back through part of the Hope Scholarship. And then I think what would happen is a lot of folks that aren't playing the lottery might just at least buy the big drawing tickets, and you'd have more money in the pot, and it would actually expand. You know, people might actually save lottery tickets, and you'd pay some out, but so many more people would be buying and buying more tickets that they would never turn in. You'd actually, you know, grow the pie, if you will. So that's something I'd like to discuss with somebody in the know as a concept. Well,
I think the first thing they should do is look at the salaries of the people who work for the lottery. I think that would be a good first step.
You can always do that. And then, unfortunately, though, even if somebody's making some crazy $500,000, a $500,000 is 10 scholarships, or it never balances out, even as egregious as some of the salaries might look on paper.
That's a good point.
Georgia, with another topic, the legislature has decided to wade into high school athletics. Now, in the past, they talked about a multiplier and put that in. And then lately, because single-A schools, public schools, are pretty disadvantaged, they have decided to say, look, if you're not going to control the private schools recruiting, we're just going to have our own championship. And they ended up making a deal where there'll be a private school single-A championship, a public school single-A championship. And they all came to terms without anybody in the legislature getting involved. Well, some lawmakers from Middle Georgia who send their kids to private schools that are part of single-A decided they didn't like this, and they're trying to, I guess, take over and co-op
the Georgia High School Athletic Association. It seems to me that the Georgia institution that's, the, you know, like the governmental institution should probably just cover public schools anyway until the private schools, like they do in other states like Tennessee and Texas, hey, y'all do what y'all want. That's what you do with education anyway. Y'all have your own championship. You want 2 classes, 5 classes, 80 classes, we don't care. That's you. We're the public schools, and we're going to have our own structure that we don't have to worry about recruiting inside and outside of school districts. Tim, is this really the right focus for the legislature? And then what do you make of the whole issue in general?
Well, when I was a kid, David, private schools like Darlington down there in Rome had their own leagues, and they never played athletic events against any public schools at all. Darlington would like even go up into Tennessee and play McCauley and stuff like that. And they would have their own separate state tournaments and stuff, and everything was great because you're right, private schools do have built-in advantages because they can recruit pretty much like a college does. They don't have, for instance, to worry about school districts like, say, the school you teach at. And as for the legislature, you know, I don't see what's wrong with them holding these separate state tournaments right now because they're still going to play against each other in regular season so that they, you know, the schools don't have to do a lot of traveling until the state tournaments. I wish the legislature would stay out of high school athletics and let the Georgia High School Association run itself like it's supposed to do. I do believe the legislature has a few other pressing problems that they could deal with except to soothe the ruffled feathers of some state legislators whose kids go to these private schools. It's ridiculous.
Yes, well, I mean, this is something they've decided to take on. Maybe they could see about getting the kids, public or private, to the athletic events a little quicker.
Yeah, you know what they really want, David? What they really want, this bunch down there, is to destroy the public schools if they can. And, you know, any way they can take a stab at them by even going after the groups that govern their athletics. They'll be more than happy to do it.
It'll be interesting. Some of these places that may have turned Republican that don't even have private schools and really value their public school extracurricular activities, this may kind of cause them to focus on some of these legislators that are supporting this, or it could cause Republicans in each of these areas to kind of turn against each other, if you will. And
yeah, well, let me ask you
another
this.
Divide.
Whatever happened to all this hollering that they've done about an abusive government that interferes in the lives of ordinary people and stuff like that? What is, ain't that what this is?
Yes. I mean, it was the government that governs least, governs best. Well, this is probably more than people that describe to that credo would think. Well, we've got about 6 minutes, and even though North Carolina is such an important topic, I don't think we could even begin to do the upheaval justice in this short amount of time. And also, there was another story that came up that piqued my interest. John Tyler, the 10th president of the United States from Virginia, his family made the news. And I, you know, I didn't even think about John Tyler. I kind of thought he was a little bit out of the political scene. And we hear about the Bushes and the Clintons and the Kennedys, but we didn't know the Tylers were still around. And apparently he has 2 living grandchildren, which is just amazing that they would still be alive and the generations would work properly. Well, one of his grandsons kind of waded into politics this week. He sounds like he's probably more fiscally conservative than us, but says that the president is a charming man and that Newt Gingrich is a jerk. And so if that becomes the matchup, he just really doesn't know who he'll vote for in November. Catherine, have you even thought about John Tyler and his family and current the political scene?
Well, I hadn't thought about him in the current political scene, but I do have a friend and business partner who is related to John Tyler. So I do think about John Tyler from time to time, but I was surprised to hear when I read that story that there's actually grandchildren. I mean, that's really, you know, just two generations. I was surprised to learn that. But I found the fellow to be kind of interesting. I guess he tours around the Virginia talking about local history, which I thought was interesting. But I love that he called Newt Gingrich a jerk. Like, of all the words to use, I thought that was, like, pretty funny. And, you know, we all think that President Obama is a charming man, so. But I mean, it's interesting that it got some attention, but, you know, it's sort of a, what do you call it? Just an interesting story, I guess. But
an aside, definitely the current political scene is not turning on him. Tim, how did you picture Newt Gingrich's face when one of the advisors came in and said, we've got a John Tyler problem?
Actually, the guy, let's go ahead and give credit where credit's due and give the correct quotation. He said that Gingrich is a big jerk, David, not a jerk, okay? And he is right. Gingrich does have a bad habit as coming off as one. This fellow was, he mentioned the women trouble with Gingrich, and I believe the way he talked that if Romney is the nominee, he'd probably vote for him because of his business background. But I don't think Gingrich should get his vote. And I found it remarkable, too, that John Tyler had grandchildren living. Apparently, this family fathered children late in life. John Tyler, I mean, fathered a son at 63. That son fathered this guy that they interviewed at the age of 71 in 1924.
Wow.
So, and he has a brother that's 4 years younger than him that's still living.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing. But yeah, I thought it was cute as a button that he would call Gingrich that when he was interviewed.
A quite prolific family. Apparently, John Tyler set the record of 15 children.
Yeah.
It was the record. It was the record of any president. Obviously, that's known, and there are a president or two that there may be some unknowns, but probably not enough to challenge Tyler. Well, we still have a minute or two, and we'll give you a little good news. He got the dual endorsements this past weekend of Fred Thompson, who really, you know, his own endorsement of himself really helped him take off, and Herman Cain. So pretty much, I think Newt Gingrich has Georgia locked down. Catherine, how big are these endorsements?
Well, Fred Thompson, like, I, when I saw that name, I was like, oh, wait, who's Fred Thompson again? Oh, he's the guy who was on Law and Order. That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't heard much from him lately. Though I did see him at, I think he was at one of the award shows. I think I saw his face at one of those award shows. And, you know, Herman Cain is all about Herman Cain. He's on 7:50 a.m. now, twice a day, giving his spiel about whatever the topic may be for 15 minutes in the morning and the evening. So he's just all about Herman Cain. He's just trying to get some ink, some, you know, some media time. But
yeah,
I never really understood the importance. I mean, I know endorsements are sometimes important, and Caroline Kennedy came out this week and reminded everybody that it was 4 years ago right now that she and her late uncle expressed their support for President Obama. But I think people like Fred Thompson, like, who cares?
I guess a really hardcore Law and Order audience care. Tim, what do you think?
Well, this is no surprise. There's an aside to this. Fred Thompson doesn't really care for Mitt Romney. After he dropped out 4 years ago of the race, he endorsed McCain over Romney. So, and plus his and Gingrich's politics are similar. So no surprise at all.
Yes.
Well, it's been a great show, guys. We got a lot of topics covered. Thanks again to David McAvoy for coming on and filling us in on all the happenings of Arkansas. Next week we'll be on early, and I believe we've already locked in the Georgia Young Democrats coming on the show in the second half hour.
That's right.
The first half hour, we're going to have Florida talk with the Florida primary coming up. Anastasia Oppa has already said she'll come on. So we're going to have a full show of guests, and we'll try to squeeze in that North Carolina talk that we didn't get to tonight and try to give it due justice. And, of course, we'll try to get Brad Cron or someone else from the Tar Heel State on in the coming weeks. But until then, in the Cudzu Vine.
Good night, everybody.